next year, 2025, is a Jubilee year. And part of the tradition of Jubilee is to visit the tombs of Saints Peter and Paul in Rome. So the city of Rome and the Vatican are working feverishly to prepare for an influx of pilgrims next year. And I've heard that there's a great need for it because the infrastructures can hardly handle the people who are already there. And if they get millions of visitors next year, they better upgrade their infrastructures, make sure they have electricity and that the roads are repaired and spaces for restrooms and all sorts of things. So I've seen a number of reports about the very busy work going on in Rome right now. Pope Francis has declared the year 2024 a year of prayer. You know this because our retreat, our Lenten retreat was on prayer. It was the theme in Lent was Speak, Lord, your servant is listening. All of 2024 has been designated as a prayer, a time of prayer preparation for 2025. Last month I was in the United States and we had a retreat and it was also on prayer because that's what the church is focusing on this year. Well, it's interesting that while the administrators of Rome are focused on activity and physical preparations, the church, at least guided by Pope Francis, is focused on spiritual preparations. I remember years ago, when I was still new in the community, Father Francis taught a principle. It went something like this. When you're busy, you need to pray more, not less. Now, at the time, I remember thinking, well, that doesn't make any sense because when you're busy, you have less time for prayer. But that was exactly the point. When you're busy, you need to pray more. Now, since that time, when was that, 35 years ago or whenever it was, I have seen that principle. I've encountered it many times in different spiritual writers and talks, so I don't think it originated with Father Francis. It's simply part of the spiritual life to recognize that when you're busy, when you have more responsibilities, more things pressing on you, more stress, more concerns, your need for prayer is actually greater. And to keep that in mind is a precious gem because the natural tendency is always to sacrifice prayer in order to get more done. And I'm embarrassed to have to admit that I fall into this all the time. Whenever I have more to do, I'm always tempted to do that first, and then if I have enough time for prayer, do the prayer. Now, I feel like an idiot because I know this principle very well. I've preached it many times, but again and again, I experience at least the temptation to say, oh, I have to do this. It's counterintuitive that when we're busy, we need to pray more. It seems to not make sense. You know why I'm bringing all this up, of course, because today's gospel is the famous story about the two sisters, Martha and Mary, one of whom is busy and one of whom is in a position of prayer at the feet of Jesus. This is a classic story and it's interpreted many ways, very often used as a instruction on the superiority of the contemplative life over the active life. Sometimes in modern interpretations, it's an example of how Jesus allowed for scandalous things like having women disciples. Sitting at the feet of the spiritual masters was considered the place of the men disciples. And here's Mary of Bethany taking that place. Whatever, those things are all probably considerations. But I would like to focus on this principle that when we're busy, we need to pray more. Because that's the very thing that Martha did not do. Martha was burdened with much serving. There was a lot to do. She was hosting a lot of people. And that experience of having a lot to do tempted her, and she fell to the temptation, to put the work to be done higher on the list of priorities than her relationship with her chief guest, Jesus. And you can see it once she opens her mouth and she says, in a kind of an accusation against Jesus and her sister, that things are not being done properly, and it's partly Jesus' fault, certainly Mary's fault, because she's not doing her part, but neither is Jesus. He doesn't care that there's a disorder here, and he hasn't said anything about it. Lord, do you not care? Implication being, you should care, and you should do something different. Do you not care that my sister has left me by myself to do the serving? You can hear the resentment, the anger, the judgment. Tell her to help me. Tell her to help me. Now, it is a prayer. Martha makes a prayer. It's a good thing, because if she kept that inside, she would be even worse. But once we open the channel of prayer, we open up the dynamic of listening. Prayer is not only complaining to God or making demands of Him. Tell my sister to help me. Do this, do that. Do it differently, Lord. Heal so-and-so. Grant this favor. That's an important aspect of prayer, although the demanding part is a little out of order. But at least we are supposed to present our needs to the Lord. We're supposed to say, Lord, give us this day our daily bread. Yes. But if we're really praying, we're not only talking, we're also listening. And when we're listening, we will often hear something like this. Martha, Martha, you are anxious and worried about many things. There is need of only one thing. Now, he doesn't call me Martha, but it doesn't call, I don't see anyone named Martha here in the congregation, but you know what this is. This is the Lord saying, okay, calm down, settle down. Don't, you know, set aside all your concerns, some of which might be important, most of them probably aren't. You know, you think that you're the center of the world and all the things you have to do are more important than God. Obviously, there's something wrong in that scenario. But anyway, the Lord acknowledges that this is where we are. He addresses us where we are, and He helps us out of our self-centered, self-righteous, judgmental inner condition by saying, okay, you're anxious, you're upset, you're worried. And then reminding us, there's only one thing necessary. There's only one thing important, and that's our relationship with God. And if we don't have that, we don't really have anything, no matter how much we might accomplish. There's need of only one thing. That's why it's that when we're busy, we need to pray more. Because when we're busy, we're at risk of losing that one thing. Then Jesus almost, it's almost, strikes us as almost rude the way he sets up as an example to Martha the very person that she's complaining about. You can imagine Martha's first reaction will be, wait a minute. Mary has chosen the better part. Mary's doing it better. Mary's surpassing you here, Martha. You think she's at fault? No. She has her priorities straight, Martha. Well, it's good to be given examples of people who are doing it right when we're not. It's good, even though we might react against it. But boy, we need these reminders. I certainly do. We need examples. And so when you look at the lives of the saints, isn't it striking how much they pray and how much they accomplish? Isn't it striking how many hours they spend seemingly doing nothing and yet how fruitful their efforts are? It's because they understand that the one thing that's necessary is the relationship with God, and once they are united with God, they can place themselves at the service of God's will. And if God wants them to be fruitful in exterior works, then they're abundantly fruitful. Sometimes the saints seem to accomplish nothing. You think St. Therese is probably one of the best examples. She didn't do anything. And yet, that, you know, judged from a worldly standpoint, she didn't go out and convert the world or build hospitals and schools. She remained in the convent the whole of her life. So, but she put herself, abandoned herself to God. She chose the better thing, the better part, and she would not let it be taken from her. And that's why she was abundantly fruitful for the spiritual good of the church and the world. Let's take a look at what St. Paul says about himself in today's first reading. It's from his letter to the Galatians. He brings up a topic that he mentions in a number of places in his letters, that is, what he used to be like before his conversion and what has changed. So he says, again, you know my former way of life, how I was so zealous than anybody else. I did more than anybody else. I was more Jewish than any Jews. I was more a better Pharisee than any of the Pharisees. And then he says, he doesn't immediately bring up the encounter with Jesus on the road to Damascus. He says, he who from my mother's womb had set me apart. He goes to a point in his life when he wasn't doing anything and couldn't do anything, as if to remind us that even that change from being a persecutor to being an apostle, that's not the key thing. The key thing is God loving him from the moment of his creation. In fact, before he was even in the womb, God already loved him. He didn't have to do anything in order to be justified. And this is what he says here. From my mother's womb, he had set me apart. And he called me through his grace. And at a certain time, yes, then he chose to reveal his son to me. But it didn't start on the road to Damascus. I think this is a good thing for us to remember. Because what we're tempted to do when we have a Martha experience and we want to be Mary, we say, okay, well, I'm not going to do it the way I was doing it. Now I'm going to do it right. Now I'm going to choose the better part. And now I'm in the right condition before God. Now God will bless me. No. God's relationship with us didn't change just because we woke up and started praying or we chose him. We have to go all the way back to the beginning. That's the foundation of our relationship with him, not our turning to him. That's the fruit of an outpouring of grace for us over many years, in fact. So Paul points out that his relationship with God starts way, way before he did anything. It's another reminder to us that even our prayer doesn't start with us. Even our choosing the better part doesn't start with us. It all starts with God. God chose the worst part. He chose us when we weren't doing the right thing. He loved us when we were still anxious and worried and judgmental and self-righteous. So even before we chose the better part, Jesus chooses the worst part. In fact, he chooses to sacrifice himself on the cross for us. It's a good reminder to us as we wake up to the tendency to set prayer aside or to let busyness take over our life, to fall into Marthaism again. It's a good reminder to us that Marthaism isn't going to draw us closer to God. It's only going to get in the way of what God has always been doing, that is, loving us. Today's psalm brings up a similar point. Psalm 139, the beautiful reflection on God's knowledge of us from the womb. You probe me, you know when I sit, you know when I stand. You know when I sit at the feet of Jesus, you know when I stand to do work. You understand my thoughts from afar. My journeys and my rest you scrutinize. My Marthaism and my Maryism, you know it all. It's not as if you only love me when I take a Mary stand. No, truly, you have formed my inmost being. You knit me in my mother's womb. I give you thanks that I am fearfully, wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. God knows us, and he knows what's best for us. That's why we need him. We need to take time with him. We need to choose the better part to discover once again, and even more deeply, extraordinary love of God.